Hello and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis. I wanted to start this podcast because it felt like there were lots of roles, be it in distribution, marketing, programming, post-production, or even on a film set, that don't get the attention they deserve. Likewise to the women doing those jobs. I'll be interviewing guests on how they got their start in the film industry, what it is they actually do, what keeps them motivated, and what their ambitions are. Hello, pod people. This is episode 2. I hope you enjoyed the first one, if you listened to it. If you didn't, I'll try not to hold it against you. Alternatively, you can go back and discover it. It's on Podbean and Spotify, and hopefully coming soon to iTunes, pending approval. Got another banger lined up for you, frankly. I'm not afraid to say it. I speak to Grace Barber Plenty, who I know from the BFI. I first came across Grace at an event for the Bechdel Test Fest. It was a 25th anniversary screening of Thelma and Louise. And more than just being a spectator, Grace was actually on the panel. And I thought she was one of those annoyingly accomplished people. She was very young and she was there on behalf of her film club, Real Good Film Club, talking about the film and its legacy. Since recording this, Grace actually announced that Real Good Film Club has, I was about to say, gone into administration, but it's come to a close as they pursue varying other projects. So this is actually quite a nice way to talk about how the club started and to sort of memorialise it in a way. I really appreciated Grace's candor, especially about a patch of unemployment and not always knowing what career path she wanted to go down. This was a great chat. Here is episode 2 of the Best Girl Grip podcast. So I guess the best place to start is, where actually did you study at university and what did you study?
So I went to Queen Mary and I did film studies because I'm basic.
So you knew that early on the kind of film was your love and what you wanted to...
Yeah, it was really weird. So when I was at college, I was very much like a lost soul and a bit hopeless. And I wasn't a bad student, but I wasn't like amazing at anything. I did I was always good at English. I did English, that was like fine. But like on a whim, I put down film studies because like I always liked films, like my parents really liked films. And I did that at college and I was like, wait, like, I really like this. This is really good. And I was always like, I'm not going to go to uni straight away. But then very, very last minute, I was like, actually, like, I might just go now. And then I was like, what do I like? And I was like, well, I only really like film. So
but I think that's kind of the best thing to do, isn't it? Mm. Is to choose what you're really passionate about. Because 3 years to dedicate in that kind of level of focus to something that you just think might be the best. You
know, because everyone was kind of like, oh, you should do English. It's really broad. You can kind of go into like any field. And I was like, but I just don't know if I'll enjoy doing English for 3 years. So we had compulsory practical stuff in our first year. And then you could go on to do a production module in second and third, which I didn't do. I did do script writing in second year, so that kind of weighed it out. But even though it was very theory-based, it was always really like, so when you like leave uni and you join a production company and you like do this and this and this, like basic assuming that everyone wanted to go into production, which was always a bit weird.
So coming out of uni, what did young Grace want to do? What direction were you thinking that you were heading in?
So I kind of always assumed sort of from end of college, beginning of uni, that I was probably going to go into journalism, or I wanted to anyway, because I've written since I was like 16, I think. So I used to do music journalism. And then that kind of segued more into film. So I had my own blog and I'm starting to do a lot more like freelance stuff. And I was kind of like, yeah, don't know how I'll get there, but maybe I'll get there. And I was also doing my film club.
Right.
So okay. I was like, yeah, programming, that's a thing that allegedly people do.
So you were doing that previous to any kind of employment that you got in film?
Yes, so we started, it was just at the very end of our first year of uni.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about that. That's the Real Good Film Club.
Yes.
That you run with two other people.
Exactly.
What is that? What do you do? How did it come about?
So it was basically kind of like a lead on from uni. So me and my friend Maria both went to Queen Mary, and my friend Lydia, who I knew at college, went to Westminster and we're all doing film studies. And we were all, we didn't hate our courses. Like, obviously, I'm so grateful I went to uni, I'm so grateful for my course. But we were like, huh, diversity isn't really like a big thing here. I think it was after we had to do 3 weeks of watching Awesome Worlds films that we were a bit like, there's got to be something else out here. And we were getting really frustrated because, like, films that sounded really cool and films we were seeking out sort of in our spare time, like the LA Rebellion movement, they were kind of being referred to as, like, postscript at the end of class. It's like, oh, yeah, and there's also this, and that would kind of be it. And we were like, well, if we're not watching these films at uni, why don't we, like, try and show them? Like, it was initially kind of for ourselves and just like further our education. And then once we did a couple of screenings, it was more, oh, other people seem to want to do this as well, so let's just show either films we think we'd really like or films that we know we like, and we kind of presume we'll find an audience for them.
I'm really interested in because when you're a multi-hyphenate, so you write, you really prolifically, you've written for Days and Confused, Gather, BFI. I was looking at your website, man, it's got a lot on it, it's got a lot on it. So writer, programmer, obviously we'll get on to what you do for the BFI,
yes.
Then real good film.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide what your priorities are? Where do you put your time?
Mm-hmm.
And as a millennial, I feel like the big question is, how do you not get burnt out? Because when you have, you're juggling all these side hustles, it's really hard, I think. You're constantly working, you're constantly switched on.
I think because I started sort of taking a lot of these things seriously when I was at uni, and it was kind of easy to be like, oh, if I get all my work done for this week, then I don't have time to like write such and such and plan such and such. Like, it was much easier to sort of schedule my time and do lots of little different things when I was at uni. And then I worked at a lot of not particularly great paid, but, you know, amazing opportunity jobs in the film industry in the last few years. But there has always been, like, a need to support myself a little bit more. And so writing has really helped with that. But it kind of became more of, like, another job rather than, like, something that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
Like, the programming, like, luckily because we don't get any money from it, has always been, like, something we've done for fun. And kind of, like, even though it's a business that we do have, like, passion and love. So I think having one thing that you're doing solely for, like, no profit, like, makes so much of a difference.
Yeah.
I think when we all went into, proper full-time employment, we all basically just took a year out and we were just, like, we're just on hiatus. We need to, like, sort our own lives and careers out first, which I think is totally fair enough, and there was like no backlash for that, like everyone completely understood. In terms of juggling, this might not be like forever, but for the time being, I've actually like put the writing on the back burner, like I'm not doing anything anymore. I don't know if I ever will again, and that's like okay, but I think it kind of got to the point where something had to give, and it's like, yeah, the film club sort of started taking more precedence again, and the writing was just like, I don't know, it wasn't like fueling me, and I think if I'm not like being fueled by writing, there's like no point doing it.
Yeah, so that's super exciting. You have things that you can kind of dip your toe in and out of, and
it is
creatively renewed by work,
yeah,
and go back to that. And so let's get on to what you do for money.
Yes, money is good.
What was your first like proper job in film?
My first proper job, so not necessarily in the industry, using air quotes, but my first proper job in film was I was box office assistant for a certain independent cinema chain.
Nice.
I worked for their flagship cinema for just over a year, whilst I was at uni and doing the film club and stuff.
Okay. And from there, did you go straight into something else?
I again juggled that with another job. So while I was doing that as my main money-making job, I also did an internship for, I think, about 9 months with the Nomad Cinema.
Okay.
Unpaid? It was paid, yeah. And they're like an offshoot of the Lexi Cinema in Kensal Rise, which is like a super cute like community-run cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And basically every year they have like a massive season of like outdoor screenings. And so I was helping with the marketing for that.
And was marketing then becoming something you thought, okay, this is maybe what interests me the most in the cinematic landscape?
I think so, yeah. Because when it sort of came to the film club, I noticed I was doing a lot of like social media and a lot of the sort of ad hoc marketing. Like, it kind of felt like we all started fitting into like specific roles. And I was like, oh, okay, this seems to be something that I'm good at, and it's also something that I enjoy. And I think before I had this like official marketing job, I didn't really know what it was, I didn't know if I could do it. And I think doing that on sort of also like an internship basis, where it's like you're not set in one particular path, but like seeing that I enjoyed it and that I was good at it, I was like, yeah, I guess I could do this.
I feel like marketing is something you can fall into. Like, maybe no one kind of necessarily pursues a career in marketing, which isn't saying they don't enjoy it, but that I'm from a very, you know, similar background in that sense, and it was something that I learned on the job. I didn't know of anyone that did marketing in film. Was that the case for you?
Definitely. Although my mum used to do press and PR, a little bit of marketing for theatres when I was growing up.
Okay, so you knew it existed in the arts.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of knew it was like a thing, but I didn't necessarily know what skills were suited to it and like what it would involve day to day. I think, yeah, that's really true. I think like a lot of like writers and especially like creatives do sort of end up in marketing, because it's a very like creative job, even though a lot of people probably don't think it is, but it is. And you're sort of picking up and putting down like lots of different like voices and personas and stuff.
Yeah, but actually that's really good practice, and copy can be like such a creative pursuit. So from Nomad Cinema, then was your next step?
So then I found myself sadly unemployed for a while, which was a bit of a shock to the system, because I was really lucky in that my job at the Nomad started in the middle of my last year at uni and continued to about the end of that year. So then to find myself unemployed and out of uni and I had to be back in with my parents, I was like, I don't know what's happening, this is so bad. And I was like, I was starting to pick up a lot more like freelance writing commissions, which was really good, but at the same time I was like, I don't want to be living with my parents and literally just sitting on my parents' sofa writing. And so I took myself on holiday with my mum for like a couple of days, because I was just like, I need to get out of the country, like I'm so depressed, like I need to do something. And I was sitting in the airport waiting to come home from a holiday to Spain, and my friend sent me this job ad on Facebook. So there's this Facebook group called Bun Babylon. No, there is a Facebook group called Bun Babylon. But there is one called Project Noir, which is basically like a Facebook group for black and brown creatives, like specifically in film and media.
Okay.
And my friend sent me a job ad from there, and it was to work as an intern at a distribution company, and particularly working on the UK release of Moonlight.
Amazing.
So I was like, huh.
Perfect.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can do that.
So I'd seen the film like twice by then, and I was like, and I'd like reviewed it, and I was like, yes, I love this film.
I saw you wrote as well, I read that piece that you wrote about Pariah not being a female on Moonlight. Was that around the same time?
Yes, I think that was a little bit later, but this is very much when I was in my like Moonlight state of mind. I used to be such a like garbage person writer, like I would find a way to like reference Moonlight in every single article I wrote.
Who is you, Sharon? A long time trying not to remember. Try to forget all those times.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you're gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
That altitude.
Altitude,
okay. Brilliant. They're a great company.
So good.
Okay, so what was your day-to-day kind of entailing to kind of give people an idea of what distribution is?
Well, I was super lucky with this internship, because although I was predominantly working in marketing, what Altitude's really good at, because they're a really small team, they've actually got a lot bigger since I left, is that I kind of dabbled in a lot of different departments. So I do a lot of marketing, but I also worked a little bit in sales in terms of sending out materials and prints and things like that, and just like combining site lists. I also watch a little bit for the home end team, like writing copy and social posts for them. And then the rest of the time was just, sort of making sure that marketing was ticking over. It was all sort of liaising with venues. As you can imagine, when like a film of that scale comes out, it was a lot of Q&As. Exactly. So it's a lot of sort of making sure all of that was going smoothly. Yeah, I really came in at sort of like at the genesis of the film. So I started in like December of, I think, 2016, and the film came out in February 2017. So it was like a proper journey to sort of see how a distribution campaign for a film sort of...
Mega exciting as well, because to work on something, obviously Barry Jenkins was not the name he was.
Exactly, then. Yeah.
So to see something really explode, it must have been...
It was insane, to be honest, and for that to be like the first film I ever worked on.
Yeah, maybe it gave you too high.
Exactly.
Just go on to my best guess.
I was saying to my friend the other day that my two goals working in distribution were to work on a film that wins Best Picture at the Oscars and a film starring Channing Tatum, and I've done both of them already, so I'm kind of like,
technically
I still work in this industry.
So I'll come back to kind of then what happened after you left Altitude, but it was really interesting to me that you said you found out about that role from a Facebook community, because I happen to think that social media networks are really key for peers getting jobs.
Definitely.
Have you found that to kind of be the case, especially in terms of promoting people that don't often get opportunities? So as you say, people of colour and women who are underrepresented in the industry, I feel like I rely more on my peers than I do people higher up.
Definitely. Yeah, I think because there is a real, like, because everyone's like a stressed millennial, we all just want to help each other out, like, where we can. And I think people of our sort of age group are a lot more willing to, like, share an opportunity with someone, sort of recommend someone for a job. And there are so many people now, like, there's, like, Twitter pages that are just dedicated to, like, freelance writing opportunities. Like, there's newsletters as well, like, listing opportunities. And then, yeah, these Facebook groups. And I think it's amazing. And it's also sort of highlighting jobs that you might not necessarily hear about, because where do you, like, hear about, like, a production assistant job? Like, there's not, like, there's really specific, like...
It's very...
website. Like, I used to literally just go on, like, Indeed.com and, like, Gumtree, Google, like, film jobs London.
Yeah. Something I found is that it's still quite a closed circle, because everyone
definitely
posting on those groups is already often part of the industry.
Yeah, exactly. That's really
so
true.
It's still quite hard to get in.
It's that, like, foot in the door.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really good about Facebook groups like Project Noir, is I didn't necessarily join that group to learn about jobs. I think I mainly joined it to have a sort of sense of community. And then it's just once I was in it that I started sort of seeing more and more and more opportunities coming up, which is, like, amazing.
And then did you go straight, was it Studio Canal that you worked
at
next?
Yes, I went straight to Studio Canal.
What were you doing for them?
I was working, again, in their marketing department, but within partnerships and promotions, which was a little bit different from Altitude.
Right.
And again, it's
about
a role
that
people probably don't know much about, which is kind of cool. The easiest way I usually describe this to people is, the one I always used to use is Tomb Raider, the like most recent one with Alicia Vikander. They did a partnership with LucasAid. And so, for example, you would get like Tomb Raider branded like bottles of LucasAid. You might see like big posters like LucasAid, and then they'd have like a little still from Tomb Raider or something. So it's basically finding brands that are interested with partnering, interested in partnering with the film, and sort of seeing what we as the film and the distributor can provide them and what support they can offer the film. And it's often getting films of varying sizes out to an audience that wouldn't necessarily go see them.
And what was it like working on studio films, coming from an outfit that tends to distribute independent cinema?
Very, very different. And it's strange as well, because I've never worked at like one of the big five, as they call them, or like the really big studios, so like Warner, Disney, and things like that. But the jump from Altitude to Studio Canal was pretty big, just in terms of the fact that their building had more than one floor, because Altitude is literally just like one office space, which is really nice, because you really get to know everyone like straight away, and it's like a very close-knit team. But Studio Canal was like, yeah, there's like, I'm never going to learn who everyone is here.
CEO is just like,
exactly,
shut
that's
away.
Just like, yeah. So that in itself was like quite big. And I think it was quite strange, because they actually, a lot of the films they work on did feel like they were sort of around the scope of a lot of things I was working on at Altitude. But then, yeah, obviously like big studio films was just insane. So working on Paddington 2 was like... very, very different to working on Moonlight. Because
what would you say like the biggest challenge of that job was?
The biggest challenge, I think, was often like demystifying what the job actually was, because not every distributor even has people or someone working in partnerships and promotions. So people might think it's like a pointless job, they might not see the value in it. And I think as well, a lot of films were really challenging to sort of market on a partnerships basis. I was having to think like really creatively, are there any links here, like how can we try and really like, target a different audience? So like I worked on Bella Thorne, like weepy romantic drama, and we were trying to target teenage girls, which we thought would be so easy, but it's actually a lot harder than we think. So I think that was a really big learning curve, that like obvious audiences aren't necessarily that each target.
Is that because their, I don't know, their trends change so quickly?
I think so. Because everyone kept being like, oh, well, you're young, you must know like what young people are into, and it's just so
different to my
weekly
girls.
I used to go on like MSN and just hang out in like milkshake shops. And that's like it, and it's they're all on like TikTok and stuff now.
Yeah, that just flew completely over my head.
Exactly, I only heard about this like last week. It's the new Vine, apparently.
Cool.
Yeah.
How long were you at Studio Canavera?
I was there for just over a year.
So you'd had about 2.5 years, three years in the industry at this point.
Exactly, because I count from sort of nomad to now, because it was such like a pivotal stepping stone.
Did you at that point feel like you were in the industry? Because again, using quote marks, because I often don't, consider. And so, did you feel sort of secure in staying in
that role for a while? All of my jobs, including Studio Canal, were all temporary jobs in terms of, I was on like a fixed contract, so our studio was there for 3 months. Studio Canal, I was meant to be there for 9, but I got kept on for an extra 3 months. That's what I think. So there was kind of always the worry in the back of my head of like, where am I going to go next? What am I going to do next? So in that sense, I was like, well, I could just stop working in distribution at any minute.
Yeah.
Because there might not be a next job coming.
It's quite scary.
It's really scary.
Yeah.
And I think, like you were saying before, like once you're in that circle, the jobs kind of do keep coming, you do keep hearing about them, but that is definitely like a period of worry.
You've got to trust that the next thing is going to come along. It's a lot easier said than done.
Exactly. And as well, like, everyone knows everyone in distribution, so often someone will be like, oh, I know so-and-so personally, they're looking, which is nepotism. Sometimes it pays off.
So, how do you cultivate those networks? Because I find networking absolutely terrifying. I'm not very good at it.
I think online networking is a lot easier. And I know people are always skeptical of social media because, it's kind of fueling all these burnouts and insecurities and like mental illness and stuff, which is so true and so valid. But I do think it works differently for different people. And like we were saying, there are these communities out there, and just like talking to like other film fans and other writers and stuff on like Twitter has been a really good platform to sort of meet new people. And then eventually, when you're in the industry and they're in the industry, then it's like people you've known for ages, like giving each other a leg up.
So top tip, establish yourself on the socials.
I think it's a weird thing because some of my friends like really fret because they're not on social media at all. And I don't think it's like necessary for every single person. I think if it's something that you enjoy and it's something you feel like you're good at, then like go for it and definitely like keep it up. If you're like, I don't know how to do this, there's no point like faking it.
Yeah, forcing yourself to.
Because you won't enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think it's been very useful to my career.
Yeah.
And then from Studio Can I came here.
I did! Here I am!
So tell us about what you do now.
So now I am permanent staff, which is the exciting thing, at the BFI. So I do marketing once again. Always marketing.
Because you're a marketing queen.
It's my Twitter bio. for BFI's distribution and DVD and also a few other sort of bits and pieces across the marketing team.
So unpack that, because whenever I tell people I work for BFI, they're like, oh, the cinema.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So what do the BFI distribution arm, what do they do, what do they distribute?
So essentially it's re-evaluating and re-releasing, often restoring old classics, like films you expect when you'd see at BFI Southbank.
Sure. So you did Bergman's The Magic Flute recently. Oh my god, is that? Yeah, that's correct, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suddenly panicked that. I should know.
Which one?
Okay, so
classics. Exactly, yeah. So classics you'd expect. Sort of underappreciated gems that you might not have heard of. So we did the James Ivory film Morris last year, because obviously he won the Oscar for Call Me By Your Name, and felt like an important film, a film not many people had seen or even heard of. And then we also do some new releases and new documentaries. So we've got an Ingmar Bergman documentary coming out 25th of January.
That looks really, really good. And also, I love the trend at the moment for biopics to sort of focus on quite a narrow
definitely.
Life, because you can't, someone like Bergman or...
he made, 350 films.
You can't expect to pack all of that into, say, a 2-hour film. So, this is just a year in the life.
Because he had a bloody productive 1937.
Mad.
It's nice for some people.
So what do you enjoy most about this role? What's the most rewarding part of working in marketing?
I think I really enjoy coming in and like week to week, we could be working on something completely different. So we just worked on like an old like Antonioni film. Now we're working on a Bergman documentary, and then we're doing like rom-com in February. It's always something really different, and I like not being able to get complacent. I like having to keep switching my like marketing hats and thinking different ways. So that's really cool.
So it keeps you on your toes.
Exactly. And also, as people might know, BFI has some nice perks. Like, it's so exciting. Just even though I didn't work on it last year, just being around sort of like the buzz of London Film Festival is like amazing. And being associated with like a cinema space that has really cool and exciting events and schemes and things like that is pretty good.
It definitely feels like my first proper grown-up job.
Oh my god, same.
Like the first time you get a pension with a paycheck.
Exactly.
Mum, I've made it.
And I don't know about you as well, but over the years, I've applied for a lot of jobs here and been kindly rejected for many of them, like from like shop assistant and like box assistant to like more sort of serious full-time job, so to like finally perseverance and patience.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about working in the film industry?
Watching those films, like that's just it. Also knowing everyone and knowing everything. So my flatmates, they like film, but they don't like the film industry, and they're always like, Grace, tell us what films are coming out this year. What should I be watching? And I'm like, guys, there's like a lot of pressure. And people going, oh, can you get us a ticket to like so-and-so? Like, you must be going to like this premiere. Like, you must be going to the BAFTAs. Like, no, I know one. It's like, yeah, you're expected to see everything and know everything at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. Is marketing where you see yourself continuing your career pursuit?
I don't see why not. Yes. It's definitely something that I'm very contented to stick with on a day-to-day basis whilst, you know, all these other little things I do are kind of ticking away in the background as more like hobbies and like extracurriculars and side hustles and stuff.
So you kind of want to keep those two, the programming side and the marketing side? Yeah, alongside one another.
I think so, yeah, and I do think they're very complementary, and the skills that I can take from this job are useful for the film club, and I do think things I've learned over the year from the film club are really essential. Like, I can see things from an exhibitor point of view and a programmer point of view, and I can see things from, like, a marketeer and distribution point of view, which I think is really important to have. Yeah, definitely. Because there's even a lot of, like, misconceptions from one industry to the other. Like, there's a lot of clashes when, obviously, they're two industries that have to work together pretty much all the time.
What's been the biggest learning curve of your career thus far?
I think probably coming out of uni and realising that the path I thought I was going to take in film wasn't the path that I actually ended up taking, and not necessarily feeling like a failure, like a fraud, that I, you know, didn't wake up one day and I was like the next Mark Mode. And sort of realising that what I'm doing is absolutely as valid and as important as what I kind of wildest dreams back then thought I was going to do.
Do you sometimes suffer from imposter syndrome?
Yeah, absolutely, all the time.
How do you mitigate that?
I think I have to take stock of like the fact that every single job I've done, I have earned them and warranted them. And I think I feel like I can see all the effort that I've put in over the years, so it's not like I knew someone that just got me this job. Like, I can be like, oh, I learned this and this at Owl Studio, I learned this and this at Studio Canal. And I think, yeah, like looking back at all the things I've learned and done over the years, it's a good way of making yourself feel valid.
What advice would you give to a future generation that are coming into the industry, maybe not sure what they want to do, how to approach a career in film?
I think try and explore as many options possible. If you're someone that's starting out doing film and you don't like production, don't feel like you're like a failure or is the end of the world. Which, to be honest, like even out of uni is something that I suffer with sometimes. I'm like, oh, life could have been so different if I wasn't so scared of being trying to be a director, or like I should have tried harder in production, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's such a shame that I feel like I'm quite well-rounded, but I can't do that. Like, it's not for everyone, and it's not like everyone should want that career path. And I think there are so many like exciting career paths out there that you might not even think of.
Yeah.
So So I think, yeah, try as hard as you can to find those. I know it is really hard, and I do think that's something the industry could be doing better, is making those career paths a bit more, like, visible and available. But
would you advise having, like, a pet project or an upstart thing that you start in uni, where it's often a lot easier to fail, because, you know, the whole
There's no stakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. I think if there is, like, an area of film you're passionate about, like, yeah, start a blog, start a film club, and, yeah, I think learn on the job. Like, I learned everything I learned about programming by just
doing it
because no one taught me about it. And I think that's luckily something that's changing. There's more, like, programming modules in unis and things like that. But at the end of the day, just, yeah, like, go out and try and do it, or if you can, just approach someone that is doing it, because I don't think people will turn you down. Like, all other film clubs that I've met have been, like, super friendly and super, like, keen to impart their knowledge. So
what's a film that you've seen either recently, it can be an old release or a new release, from a woman director that you love and would recommend?
I'm very late to the party, but I literally saw Leave No Trace on Sunday, and it was amazing, and I'm still kind of shook by it. Like, I was in bed last night, and I was like, I've recently turned into quite a crier in cinema, which I never thought would happen, like sobbing mess, but I didn't cry at all in that film. But the whole time I was just like, this is so sad, this is so sad, this is so sad. And then I was thinking about it last night in bed, and I like nearly started crying, just like thinking about it a day later. I just think, yeah, it's incredible. Like, the performances are incredible, and the way that it's written and acted is so well nuanced. Like, you could go in and watch it and you're just like, oh, it's a film about father and daughter living in the woods. But then, like, the way that she makes you pick up on, like, those key nuances is just, like, really beautiful, and it's really tender and emotional.
It's not a crime to be unhoused, but it's illegal to live on public land.
We have found an option.
Are we gonna be okay here?
You can still think our own thoughts.
Keep pedaling. Look where you want to go.
School is about social skills, not just intellectual ones.
I think it might be easier on us if we try to adapt.
We're wearing their clothes, we're in their house, we're eating their food, we're doing their work. We have adapted.
So for those that don't know, Leave No Trace is, I think, a third or fourth feature from Deb O'Brien.
Yes.
So she came to public attention, I think, with Winter's Bone, which launched Jennifer Lawrence's career. If you haven't seen that, definitely, let's see it.
Also a great film.
But she's just
somewhere in America.
She has such, like, vivid sense of landscape as well.
Yeah,
as you say,
definitely.
Like, she kind of has a real sense of place, but then she really focuses on performances.
Mm.
Such
she's a good one.
I wanted to, like, more in the awards.
I know, I saw it and I was like, we're not nominating this for awards? Like, is everyone okay?
She should definitely get a Best Director.
Oh, definitely.
Fingers crossed. And then coming back to women in film in terms of our careers, who is someone, it can be a director, a writer, or someone, a crew member, or you know, coming from your perspective, a marketer or a programmer, that you think is doing really cool stuff in the industry and that we should be paying attention to?
So in terms of a director, I'll start with the obvious one. My absolute favourite film of 2018 was called Shakedown by Lila Weinrub, I think her name is pronounced. It's honestly one of the best films and the best documentaries I've ever seen. It's, like, vivid and intense, but really beautiful, and it so captures the sense of, like, community and time. So look out for her. I really hope she's going to do more stuff. She's amazing, like, a force to be reckoned with. Who else? Someone who I'm always excited to see what they're doing next is Jenna Carew, the director, who she's done a load of shorts, and I now obviously can't remember the name of her most recent one. She's also just joined a collective with, I think it's with Bradford Young. I know she's worked with him a lot. And Terrence, what's his name? Terrence Nance.
Okay.
And other people like that, which is super exciting. And she's just worked on a film. She's done quite a few music videos for Kamasi Washington. I think she's also just done a feature film on it.
You've been listening to Best Girl Grip. Thank you to Grace for joining me. Thank you for downloading the episode. You can't rate or subscribe just yet, I don't believe. But if you do have any suggestions for questions, or you just want to let me know how good, mediocre, bad this podcast was, you can tweet me at StoneColdFox. COLEDFOX on the Twitter. I've got a great guest lined up for you next week. I'm really excited to get the episode out. Her name is Helen Simmons. She is a writer and producer. So yeah, look out for that next week.